Guardian Unlimited.
This is Zan Brooks at the Guardian NFT interview with Gael Garcia Bernal, and I feel like the oldest git at the party. Now, normally these events are sort of tributes to some seasoned old veteran, and are therefore attended by an audience of seasoned older film aficionados. But Mexican-born Bernal is just 27 years old, and the audience gathered here are largely in their 20s, they're predominantly female, and they seem to be pretty excitable as well. So there's no doubt that Bernal, with his sort of roguish, boyish charm and soulful eyes, is a big hit with the ladies. Fortunately, he happens to be a pretty fine actor too. You could even describe him as the kind of poster boy for La Buena Onda, which was the renaissance in Latin American cinema that occurred a few years back. He kind of epitomised a sort of youthful promise and vitality. And he arrived on the scene with starring roles in a pair of brilliant Mexican movies in 2001, Amores Perros and Y Tu Mama Tambien. From this auspicious start, he went on to work with Pedro Almodovar on Bad Education and Walter Salles on The Motorcycle Diaries, in which he played the young Che Guevara. But he has also worked in the English language on productions like The King, the upcoming Babel, and The Science of Sleep. And it turns out that his English is very good, perhaps a result of studying drama in England as a boy. In fact, as he told interviewer Jeff Andrew, it was while he was actually in London that he got the call to act in Amores Perros. The rest, of course, is history, although, as he says, it didn't feel like that at the time.
In Mexico, very little films were made, and it belonged to a very specific group, a very specific clique, which used to make these films. And my parents certainly didn't participate in that group. I mean, they were more theater actors. And so it just happened. The story is not that. I mean, it might sound romantic in 30 years' time, but right now it's not. it was very immediate. I came here to study, and in the year and a half that I was, in the 3 years that I was here, by the year and a half, more or less in the second term of the second year, I was invited to do a casting for Amores Perros, and. I got a phone call from El Negro González Iñárritu, the director, and he was inviting me to read some of the scenes and to videotape myself and to send it back to him. And I guess that was a casting. I hadn't done a casting before in my life. So I did that. I videotaped it myself. I read it with another person that helped me out. And I actually just read it. Really, but I gave everything that I could in just reading a scene. And a little bit after that, I get a phone call back from him, and he says, "Let's do it." And I go, "Yeah, great, let's do it. Yeah, let me read it. I didn't know what was the story about." So he sends me the script. I read the script, and I tell him, "Yeah, I was going to tell him yes anyways." And I started to read it, and there was one big problem, which was the fact that my school didn't allow me to work, basically. And they don't allow you in England, very well thought of. In England, they don't let you miss school. If you miss more than 3 days, you're chucked out. Which is, you know, in Mexico, it's completely incomprehensible that. But here in England, it's what it should be, and I think that's the way it should be. So, telling this to the director, to Alejandro, he found a very good way. I mean, he's a very good producer in this sense, and like I said before in the last talk, I mean, he found out a very good Latin American solution to this problem, which was he said, "Well, I have my cousin is the director of a hospital. And so I can get a justification that says that you had a big tropical disease in your last visit to Mexico and you'll be out of it." And it was perfect because I was coming back from Amores Perros with no hair as well. And with the scar, you know, like from the accident and stuff, so people believed me completely. And they even told me, because this was only 1 year, 1 week I missed. So it wasn't that much. But from 10 weeks of a term, yeah, it was a bit of a, you know, especially the movement teacher was very, very, very disappointed. And also because I arrive and she says, well, you have to take it easy. Just take it easy. And my other colleagues sent me get well letters to Mexico. It was very embarrassing. Obviously, when 1 year after that, 1 year, no, 1 year and a half after that, at the third year, I was invited to do Y Tu Mamá También, because the director of Y Tu Mamá También saw some clips of Amores Perros and helped him with the edit. And so he saw me in the film and invited me over to participate in Y Tu Mamá También. And I come back from doing Y Tu Mamá También to my school, and there's a film that's coming out in Cannes that you're in. And and I was like, oh, well, yeah. this little thing. Because it really felt like a little thing. I mean, I remember the last thing I said to them, to the producers, when I was doing at the end of Y Tu Mamá También, I told them, can you please record me a VHS of the film so I can show it to my family.
Perhaps Bernal's most obviously iconic role was playing Che Guevara in Walter Salles' The Motorcycle Diaries. Now, this was the film that kind of broke him out of Mexico. Here he was playing a sort of Argentinian for a Brazilian director in a film that really kind of touched on the socio-political reality of South and Central America itself. And Bernal is quite a kind of politicized individual, and this film in particular was very important to him.
It was a big reaffirmation on wanting to work in Latin America, wanting to live in Latin America, wanting to travel throughout Latin America, and wanting to know myself, really. It's a film that if I would have been a bit detached from whilst making it, it would have been a useless experience. It's an experience that, because I was so dead on it, you had to give yourself into it and transform yourself the same way that these characters transformed themselves into what they became. And obviously it's different times nowadays, I mean, than 50 years ago. Now we have the fortune of knowing a little bit of the history of Latin America in a much more broader sense than they did in those days. It is more complex yet, even now. Things have changed for good, things have changed for bad, for worse in many cases. It is a journey that even if we hadn't made the film, it would have changed our lives forever. And I truly see that the only way out in this block of filmmaking, or the, you know, in general, is to unify criteria. but to be specific with our context. You know, to be incredibly specific with the context that we're telling these stories. But in Latin America, we have the same problematic all over Latin America. It is exactly the same. In some places, it's more evident than in others. We have the same incongruencies. We have the same. We share the same failed neoliberalist dreams. You know, that we share the same. Same sense of disgust with what that democracy has given us these days. We share the same hope as well that things will work out in a way, and also we have a very thing that is quite in common in all of us, is that we know that money is worth nothing. Really, I mean, when I was a kid, I saved money to travel. I was working and I was saving money to travel, and one day after the other, the money was four times less, you know, than what its value was before. And this was my case, which is it's not dramatic, I mean, but there were people that were actually starving because of that, And it is, you know, we're living a very difficult moment in terms of dialectic as well. I mean, there's two very clear sides that are being fragmented and that are switching. You know, it's getting a bit radicalized, the thought process. The middle ground, which is the basis of democracy, to find the common ground, is losing itself. And so basically we share the same urge to get back together, to use this media to get it together in some way, to understand and accept the big tragedy that we are countries that are made out of colonial caprices. I mean, we are countries that don't necessarily were meant to be countries, but other people decided it was going to be. The church decided that this country was this country, that this country was this country. And so there's nothing that we can do but keep on the search, you know, keep on the fight in a way. Yet if you look at history, there's a repeating sense all the time, which is violence, which is people that had privileges, underprivileged people overthrowing the privileged people to get those privileges to themselves. And that doesn't generally mean justice. So I hope for the best. I mean, maybe extrapolating myself, I'm talking about my own inner wishes, but I think that's something that that cinema in Latin America should finds its place. And we should work together, because as a bloc, I mean, we share the same language. And in the case of Brazil, it's different. But still, we share the same circumstances, and we might as well work as a bloc. You know, I mean, you go to a stand in a film festival, and you see a whole stand that says Asian cinema. And in Asia, they speak so many languages, and the cultures are so very different, and there's even more people there and more varied. You know, then you go to the Mexican stand, to the Argentinian stand, to the Cuban stand, to the Colombian, and we get lost there. Should work like as a bloc in a way.
If there is a last lingering problem with the Latin American cinema scene that Bernal embodies, I guess it's the question of whether this is a kind of long-term self-sufficient industry or whether it's a launch pad. And certainly in recent years, the jury's kind of still out. You've got Alejandro González Iñárritu, who made Amores Perros, going off to make English language films like Babel or 21 Grams. And then you've got the prospect of someone like Fernando Mireles, who made City of God, going off to make the English language thriller The Constant Gardener. And Bernal, too, now finds himself in demand in Hollywood. So there's a case to be made, and some skeptics have made it, that basically these are kind of like millionaire wetbacks. They're making their calling card films at home, and then they're getting out across the border as soon as they can. And Bernal had some interesting thoughts to say on this subject.
I mean, it's the saddest thing, isn't it? I mean, it is. I mean, every day, I don't know, like 10,000 people cross the border from Mexico to the United States looking for opportunities. And some of them risk their lives. Most of them risk their lives whilst doing this. It is a country that shamefully doesn't provide the opportunities equally, democratically, to everyone. Although I must say that there is a sort of a myth as well about that, I think, because if you have something to tell, then you will find a way of telling it. And you might get frustrated because only four people see it, but hey, that's the country that we live in. You know, I mean, I've been going in circles thinking about this. You know, I could say to myself that I could live somewhere else, but to have a better life. But what's better in living somewhere else? To be an exile of myself. You know, I don't want to be an exile of myself. I want to have the chance to live in the country that I come from and to experience the country that I come from and to live it, so to know that maybe it wasn't the country for me. But never. But I see the I see a line that tells me, or I feel a thing that tells me that I have to live in Mexico, that I have to work there, that I have to keep on trying, and I have to keep on struggling, and I have to say no to this very seducing offers that come from other places.
Guardian Unlimited.